depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of March 6, 2016. I'm Kurt Franklin, Executive Editor for Technical Content at Information Week, and your host for this episode of Information Week Live. We have a great panel today, and we've got a lot of news to get to, so let's dive right in. Joining me today, we have Information Week Assistant Editor and International Correspondent, Kelly Sheridan. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
We have Information Week contributor and longtime Information Week Live panel member, Larry Loeb. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Kurt.
And we have my fellow executive editor at Information Week and the man holding down the left coast for Information Week, Dave Wagner. Dave, welcome to Information Week Live.
Thanks, Kurt. Does that mean if I let go, we have an earthquake?
Let's not risk it. I just don't think it's worth the risk.
Okay, I'll keep holding it down. Let me know if I can take a break.
Well, as those of you who are frequent listeners know, for the next 12 months, Kelly is going to be reporting for us from around the world. Now, Kelly, can you remind us again of where you are in March?
Surely. For this month, I am in Cordoba, Argentina, which is the second largest city in Argentina. It's in smack dab in the middle of the country. Very nice city so far, friendly locals. I like it here.
Very, very cool. We'll try to get up a link to some Google Maps of Cordoba sometime soon so people can have a mental picture of where it is you are. Now, as I recall, last week you talked about the working space that you've been using, because you're not just sitting around in a coffee shop to get most of your work done, are you?
No. I'm working in a dedicated workspace right now. We are in a building that's similar to a WeWork, if you're familiar. So basically people from all different companies are working together in this one space, and it has all the amenities of a normal office. Like, I'm sitting in a conference room now. There's access to a printer and a scanner, and it's been a seamless experience working here. So far, so good.
Very cool. Now, I know that you are with a group of people who are traveling to do this year of working abroad. Are there people who are local to Cordoba who use the space as well? And we just lost Kelly. This is one of those things that will happen once in a while. We're going to go on. She's going to call back in, but this is one of the things that happens when you're doing international radio live. So while we're waiting for Kelly to drop back in, Larry, I want to turn to you and ask a question. I know that you keep your fingers on the pulse of a lot of different technologies here in the industry. So did you find any truly interesting stories?
Did you just call me a geek?
Yeah, but with a capital G, so it's a compliment.
Ah, okay. Okay. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of technologies coming out that are being announced more than have just happened, I think. One of the bigger stories has been that they actually showed a quantum computer that is scalable. They came up with a different technology for the machine involving lasers and whatnot that basically allows something called Shor's algorithm to be executed. Shor's algorithm is really good for the fast decryption of defactorization of two prime numbers. Now, if you ask why would anybody want to factor two prime numbers anyway, well, that's basically RSA cryptography in a nutshell. now that they've come out with this new computer, RSA style of technology and encryption is looking a little bit obsolete. The machines aren't here yet, but they're going to be coming. This is probably why 2 months ago, the NSA sort of said to the government, can we get off of this kind of encryption and go over to this, which is resistant to quantum computing? I think they had a look at this paper before they said that.
Well, it's interesting that they would have said that, because using lots of different, I assume they're still calling the individual compute units qubits, which is what a lot of people are calling them. And with most quantum computers, the real problem with qubits is that they have to be amazingly physically stable. And in temperature and in vibration sense, is that still true with these new qubits, as far as you know?
The technology, yes. I believe they still have to do that. They do something with lasers to hold things steady so that they get a better signal to noise. The point was, they managed to do the Shor's problem. Instead of at the 15 qubits that it usually takes, like with a D-Wave computer or something like that, they got it down to 5. They also showed it. They also showed at the same time a mechanism on how to scale these kind of computation engines to work rather well with Shor's algorithm. It's pretty compelling stuff.
Most interesting. Now, I want to let everyone know that Kelly has been able to rejoin us in MIT. So, Kelly, we're glad to have you back. We've been talking about quantum computing with Larry. Now, Dave, I know you follow a lot of technologies. Is this something that you've been following at all?
I have to say Larry knows way more about it than I do. But I have a question for Larry that I hope is based on a certain amount of educational level of this. Larry, this seems to be certainly important and obviously a huge breakthrough. But it seems to me that when you mentioned the NSA wanting to get off of that kind of encryption, and that makes sense. But to me, for now, the cost of something like this means that this is still sort of a state-level security issue, or I suppose a truly organized crime sort of thing. For the average person, they're not going to be able to afford a quantum computer and do this, right? So for the average person, that RSA encryption is still perfectly fine, right? For the average
right now, nobody, including the Russian mafiosi types, are going to be getting a desktop quantum computer.
Exactly, right.
But what this showed is, for the first time, a way to do things that would allow for scaling of these kinds of computers. Now it becomes a technology question. Just pumping, one of the authors even said, just pumping a whole bunch of technology is how the scalability will be achieved, not by changes in particle physics or the physics of the whole thing. It's not here today, but dadgum, it's going to come down the road.
Right, but I'm looking at it from the enterprise point of view right now, and I think it's fair to say that we're talking decades, right? I mean, to scale it to the point where we're worried about, price and affordability for the bad guys to have it.
Well, the point I think that some of these people are making is, if that ability, for instance, becomes a service, quantum as a service, QAS or something, in 5-10 years, are the bad guys going to be able to get a hold of your data and decrypt it? That may be, as much as anything, the kind of thinking that went into the NSA announcement.
Right. So I think that quantum as a service is not something I had thought about.
And I think it's worth pointing out that one of the companies that has made significant investments in quantum computing is IBM, a company that has been pushing their cloud services forward at a tremendous rate lately. And I think it's worth pointing out to our listeners who might not be up to date on everything quantum computing, that the reason that scaling matters is that in quantum computing, any one run of the algorithm may or may not give you the right answer. That's just the nature of quantum physics. What you get is an answer with a statistical probability of being correct. So in order to zero in on the correct answer, they run the algorithm thousands or millions of times and take what is essentially the average of all those answers, and that is the response that the computer kicks out. So if you are able to scale it, you're able to go through those millions of iterations much faster, which makes getting your answer much faster. Did I say something wrong there?
No. You got it down on the kinds of machines that have been running. The guys who wrote the paper also made the really, really bold statement that how they got things to work works at 99% all the time. So you may be able not only to run specific algorithms faster, you may have to run them less times to get a real answer. Speed.
Now that is a truly, truly huge breakthrough. That is big news. And
I'm a big guy.
That you are. And we're probably not going to let you forget it. So that's a good thing. Well, while we're basking in all of the glory here in North America, let's go back to Kelly. Kelly, you were telling us about the co-working situation you're in down there. My question to you had been whether this is a space that's also used by people who are local to Cordova, or is it just for international visitors?
It's for locals as well. So I apologize, by the way. I am strictly on cell service now, so the Wi-Fi doesn't interfere. But we are sharing this floor specifically with a few locals who work in this space every single day. And I felt bad at first because there are so many of us and so few of them, but they've been extremely welcoming, and I'm pretty sure they're all working for startups and kind of like on the tech space. So they're all online all day, very similar to all of us.
Well, speaking of technology, I wanted to ask, we've talked a little bit about the tools that you're using in order to do your job while you're going around the world. Are you discovering new tools or new services that you're able to use, or is this something where you had your basic set of tools in place before you left and have just continued to use it while you're away?
Generally, my setup is very similar to how it was before I left. So really all I need to do my job is a laptop. But I've noticed just looking around at some of the people that I'm traveling with, a lot of people are traveling with, like, portable keyboards, external displays, like second monitors that are built to be portable and carried around like this. So you have a lot of people with a more complex setup. A lot of the designers have digitizers, so whatever they write on the digitizer goes on their screen. So it varies from job to job. But personally, I have my laptop, I have my phone, and I have my headphones, and I'm all set.
Well, while you're doing your job, you're still looking for the news coming out of especially the Microsoft universe. Has there been any of that this year? This week.
A lot, actually.
Yes, give us a rundown on the year so far in Microsoft. No, please don't. What's been going on this week?
I was like, let me dig into my sources and see what I can pull out for you.
There's this thing called Windows 10, Kurt.
The things you miss if you blink.
It has been a fairly hectic week watching the space that I watch. We had Dynamics AX, Microsoft's ERP software, now is fully run on the Azure cloud. That was officially announced this week. There was a preview period that started in November, and now it's fully launched. And there were a number of updates to Skype for Business, including this interesting project called Project Rigel, which businesses who can't afford advanced video use this project to connect their traditional displays. What else did we have? Salesforce announced Salesforce IQ Inbox for Microsoft Outlook. It formerly was only available on Gmail, and now it has a whole new with Outlook. So those are just of the few updates that I've been watching this week.
Okay, we lost some of what you said in the middle of that, but the thing that we came back in on was the Salesforce integration with Outlook.
Salesforce, okay, so you came in on that part, right?
Correct.
I apologize. Okay. Before that, I was talking about there were Skype for Business updates. Companies can use, through a new initiative through the Skype team, they can use their traditional displays and projectors to connect to Skype through Skype for Business using Office 365.
I wanted to ask you about that, the integration of Office 365 and Skype for Business, because that's something that Google is selling pretty hard as one of the advantages for using Google Docs or Google applications for work. The fact that you can be in the middle of a document, and if you want to collaborate with someone, you just hit the Google Voice button right there in the document, and you don't have to go off and do something else in order to communicate. Do you get the sense that Microsoft is either offering that level of integration now or is in heading in a direction where they will offer that kind of integration?
Well, with the news announced this week, you can call someone through Skype while you're in, say, like Word on Office Online. So it's the same exact concept. So, like, let's say I'm editing a document in Office Online and someone else is editing it in a different office and I had a question, I'd be able to directly contact them using Skype, so it's a direct competitor.
All right, so that leads me to a question for everyone on the panel this week. Now, Kelly, I'll start with you. I was at Enterprise Connect in Orlando this week, a conference that's all about this kind of stuff. As a matter of fact, the VP for
Periscope.
You did see my Periscopes.
I did see the scoping going on.
There was scoping, and there was a lot of video. There was a lot of interesting stuff happening at what is, I have to say, a very successful show that continues to grow year over year. The interest in that topic is just amazing. But one of the big questions that was out there is essentially whether unified communications, that is the communications that bring together text messaging and voice and video, whether that's going to remain an independent set of tools and an independent client sitting on your workstation or your smartphone, or are all of these going to be subsumed by other applications where, as we were saying, if you're in a document and you want to collaborate, you just click to collaborate within the document. If you're in a spreadsheet, you do it. If you are within an enterprise application like Salesforce or SAP or Oracle or something like that, Kelly, as you're looking at Skype for Business and you're hearing what the Microsoft people are saying, do you see a point down the road where Skype for Business is a service that's offered rather than a client that we talk about going on the desktop?
I think that's a really interesting question. I think that I certainly think that this is something that you make basically into service. Can't call your first actually possible.
Kelly, I'm going to have to ask you to repeat that whole thing.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was
you
saying
didn't
how,
do it, Kelly.
I was saying that it's a very
fault.
Interesting. Thank you. I'm still getting used to all of this, but I was saying how it's an interesting question because while I appreciate that Microsoft is taking the step forward to integrate the Skype capabilities into different apps, I'm not sure I see the client going away exactly in the near future.
All right. Now, Dave, you and I were talking about communications before we came onto the air, and you've thought about a lot of this. You use a different set of technology than I do. So what do you think about this? Is communication something that you see just being part of the other things we do at some point rather than being something you have to stop and do? Or do you think there's enough value in taking a pause simply to communicate to have the clients remain separate?
Right. Well, two things here. First is, as much as I appreciate Google and Microsoft making it easier to Skype in a document, the truth is when it comes to the actual moment of communication, we're still basically talking about no real difference than having two windows open, right? All we've done is we've moved the button from the toolbar into the app. So as much as I want to get excited about this, I can't get overly excited about it. on a larger level, though, I do think we're going to see an integration phase. What I feel like we've seen my whole life with technology is pendulum swinging moments where somebody comes out, whether it's through the operating system or through a big enterprise system like an Office or even an ERP, somebody comes out with a big monolithic thing that includes lots of options, and then they don't innovate it. Then other innovative things come out through clients and add-ons and separate places, and a whole bunch of those happen, and then the big monolithic competitors that survive that innovation phase have a tendency to gobble up all of those really good ideas and incorporate them back into the big monolithic thing. I think we're seeing similar things on the phone, right? Is I think we're about to go through an integration phase. We had an app culture where every app did one thing. We called a taxi. We made a call. We made a text, whatever. I think we're going to see similar integration there. We're even seeing it on Facebook, where Facebook is gobbling up chat and other functions so that you don't leave Facebook, right? So I think we're in a gobbling phase. We're in a let's steal the innovations phase. But in 3, 5, 10 years, whatever long it takes, there'll be an innovation phase, and the client will come back because the client won't be a partner with whatever big monolithic technology you're using. And then it'll get gobbled up all over again.
Okay. So the pendulum swinging between monoliths and things that are gobbled up. Larry, you and I have been in the industry long enough to see a bunch of these pendulum swings. What is your take on this? Is the communications client going to go away, or Do you think that it is going to be something where we basically just have multiple ways of getting into communications, either through dedicated client or through, say, our spreadsheet or document?
Some of that's going to depend on the trade-off between convenience and security. If one particular channel is more secure than another, that may be a definite selling point, whether it's engulfed in a monolith or on its own. That's why things like telegraph are around, is secure messaging. Whether or not someone is going to reinvent the wheel here and put the same kind of secure messaging inside something else, they're going to try, but they won't be, I think, as successful as the first ones in.
That's very interesting. And it actually echoed some of the comments that I was hearing down at Enterprise Connect. I think that what we have are some vendors trying to figure out what the market is telling them. And I don't know whether anyone has succeeded yet.
It's always been there, Kurt. You know, somebody comes up with one idea and it spurs, and I use the quote sparingly here, innovation in other products. But that innovation is generally a function of marketing. What does the product, whatever it may be, do to be a viable business? And if the viable business includes breaking down some of the barriers that have existed between various forms of communication, it'll happen. But if one does it and basically says this is the feature set we tend to support, its competitors will do the same thing too.
Right.
I've seen it.
The one thing I have to say about unified communication that, you know, interests me or confuses me or however you want to put it, is the cost to communicate continues to drop, right? Even from phone to email to text, each level it gets easier and easier to communicate with somebody. The question I have with unified communication is how much easier do we really have to make it? And of course, the question, there's always an answer. Someone will always come up with a way to shave a tenth of a second or hundredth of a second from our communications. But ultimately, really, I'm just not going to be impressed by somebody who says at this point, you can save one click to communicate. Right, and that's what we're getting down to is click levels. Now, I agree with Larry that from an infrastructure or security point of view, there are whole different issues, right? But from a work point of view, from the perspective of how to sell something to somebody, because you're going to sell it on two levels. You're going to sell it on security, and you're going to sell it on ease of use to customers. We're getting to the point where, from an end user perspective, the level of improvement doesn't necessarily equal the level of increased complexity on the back end.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting the thing that you said there about the cost, because in many ways, the cost of all of this communication is being borne by the network requirements for video communication. The video has exploded, and a network that can handle video can absolutely handle text and voice without any trouble. It's sort of like the interstate highways. They are built to deal with trucks, and so cars basically travel for free. Now, the thing that I heard a number of the technical folks talking about was the complexity of making sure the network can, in fact, handle video and to a slightly lesser extent, voice calls. Getting all of that to happen over the classic business MPLS network is more complicated than a lot of CIOs and pretty much every CEO thinks it's going to be. So there really is a lot going on for the back end in order to try and make the experience as seamless as possible for the front end. And Larry, I cut you off, so I'll please go ahead.
If you want Cortana to dial your phone call, that's one kind of integration where basically you just put something else on top of another. The complexity would be in the phone that's being dialed, not necessarily the program itself. Go ahead.
I was going to say no question. That it's funny that one of the words that we were hearing a lot at Enterprise Connect was interoperability at a hardware level. So lots of folks would absolutely agree with you on what you're saying here.
And there has to be a business case for having seamless communication within an enterprise because it's a lot harder to actually do. When you're dealing with what used to be the Bell telephone system, somebody already did your networking for you. When you're doing it yourself, you have to adjust for the mobile and non-mobile cases. You have to decide what kinds of mobile communications you want to integrate into it. So that, I think, is where Dave's complexity is coming from.
Right. So for me, UC is all about productivity, right? So in the 80s and 90s, and you can even go back farther, the case was easily made for technology increasing productivity of individual workers, right? Up to email, the case is easily made that technology productivity, you know, technology improves productivity. From about 2006 forward, it is much harder to make an argument that in North America, at least, that worker productivity has increased with the cost of technology that we've invested in. Mobile has not done the same in terms of productivity as we expected it to do in comparison to, say, email. Tablets have not done that. Productivity has not stayed with inflation over the last decade. So the question really has to be, when we're talking about UC, are the gains that we're making in integrating communication going to actually pay for themselves in terms of increased worker productivity? And we are not seeing that yet. I'm not saying it can't happen, but there is a point where CIOs really have to ask the question, are we buying this to increase worker productivity? And if we are, how much is it going to do that? Because if we're not increasing worker productivity, there's a real question of whether we should be investing in it at all in the enterprise at this point.
Well, that is exactly the question that CFOs, CIOs, and CEOs are asking. You know, what's the payback on all of this? And it's one of those things that I think we can have some great discussions about. Unfortunately, we don't have time to have them today because we have managed to go through an entire episode of Information Week Live having this conversation, and there's still a lot more to have. Now, we want everyone to plan to join us for future episodes because you'll hear conversations like this, and frankly, because you'll have the chance to participate in these conversations if you're listening to us live by taking part in the online discussion that goes on around the episode as it's broadcast at informationweek.com. Before we turn everyone loose, we have to ask some questions that we always ask. So, Kelly, we're going to ask first, what's on your radar for the coming week? What sort of things should people be looking for from you next week at informationweek.com?
I'm going to continue keeping my eye on the Microsoft space, and I'd like to somehow celebrate Women's History Month, which is March, so keep an eye out for a piece on that.
Very good. And how can people follow you on social media to stay in touch with what you're writing and keep up with what's going on as you continue your travels?
You can find me on Twitter, where my handle is Kelly Sheridan, first name, last name, 22.
Very good. We will all do that. And trust me, if you're interested in the Microsoft space, in some really fascinating topics, as she said, she's going to be doing something around Women's History Month for women in the computing industry. Be sure and follow Kelly Sheridan 22 on Twitter. Well, Larry, how about you? I know that you cast your eyes on a broad swath of the IT industry. What's on your radar screen for the coming week?
There is going to be a movie about a little-known group of African-American women that may have actually gotten us to the moon. The novel that this movie is based on won't hit till later in the year, but the way it looks, it's going to be something that will be rather informative, speaking of Women's History Month.
Very, very
cool.
You
can get me on Twitter at Larry Loeb and pretty much anywhere else by my name.
Outstanding. Well, Larry, thanks for taking time out of a busy schedule to be with us today. And wish everyone out there should follow Larry on Twitter. Very interesting stuff that he is constantly finding for us. So thanks for joining us.
It was all my pleasure.
Well, Dave, how about you? That leaves you sitting around the table with me. What's coming up from Dave Wagner this week?
I'm going to be building an ark as it continues to rain here in California. beyond that, I am going to a topic that I'm asked about a lot from our readers is how do I make the leap from IT pro to IT leader? So I talked to an executive recruiter on that very topic. We'll have that very shortly. I think she has some very useful things to say. So if you're hoping to be a CIO or a director and you're currently a middle manager or below, I think this is going to be a very useful article for you.
Outstanding. We will absolutely keep up with that. And speaking of keeping up, how can people find you on social media?
At GeekendDave on Twitter and also at Information Week and allanalytics.com.
Very good. Thanks so much for being with us. Now, as for me, I've got stuff coming up, some more from Enterprise Connect, because that was just a fascinating show. I've got some more coming up from that. Going to have some more from the world of agile development and DevOps. And with all of that, you can follow me at KG4GWA on Twitter. And as Larry pointed out, I also tend to get out and do some periscoping. Now, when it comes to getting out there, I'll want to talk about real quickly the Information Week Elite 100. We have found our finalists for the Elite 100. The editors and writers of Information Week are out doing interviews, preparing stories, all of which will culminate in the Information Week Elite 100 Conference, which will be happening at the Four Seasons Hotel in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada, on May 2nd and 3rd. Now, if you are an IT executive, if you are an IT professional who plans on becoming an IT executive, you really need to follow the Information Week Elite 100 and plan to be at the conference if it's at all possible. It is going to be an amazing collection of executives who come together to talk about what they have done to make sure that their organizations are as creative and successful as possible. So go ahead at informationweek.com. Look at the top. You'll see events, Information Week 100. Take a look there. Lots of great stuff. And I don't say that just because I've already gotten my assignment to write one of the pieces. Well, you will find us here every Friday at 3 p.m. Next Friday, it will be 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time rather than Eastern Standard Time. If you're listening to us live, we really appreciate you being here. If you're listening to us in a podcast or streaming format, we appreciate you as well. Well, for Kelly Sheridan, Larry Loeb, Dave Wagner, and me, Kurt Franklin, thanks for being with us. We'll see you next week.